Welcome to Dark History Time with Brian. A few things before we get started. Need to let you know that you might find some of this material disturbing. We do use adult language on the show. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Dark History Time with Brian after about a two-week hiatus. Wanted to take a little time off and refocus on how I wanted to present the pod. I'm very happy with what we have been doing. I know there's been some desire to make them a little bit longer and maybe a couple different subjects. In my time off, I still didn't really figure that out, so that's still part of the plan. I'm not sure that I'm going to get into a real long one this week. It is a case that I want to talk about, but I'm not sure if it's going to really far exceed runtime of the previous ones, just because there's not a ton known about this guy prior to the acts that he perpetrated that I'm going to talk about today. So I'm not sure this is going to be a super long one like it would be if I was doing a serial killer and had all of their childhood and their high school and their formative years and all of that good stuff. Excuse me, there has been some people say, oh, you need to hit on some of the bigger cases, even if they've been done before, just to draw in the audience. And I know that, but I also slightly hesitant. I do like the idea of bringing cases to people that they haven't heard over and over and over again. So, still feeling my way through it. I appreciate everybody for listening to what I have put out there so far. Getting a few more listens here and there. I think I broke 125 threshold here recently, and that's without putting anything else out. So hopefully we'll be back on the swing there. And I think I've also determined just now that I'll probably do this every other week rather than every week, just to give me the time that I feel it deserves to research and write out outlines for you guys so I can present them the best way possible and not shortcut anything and not shortchange anybody on the cases. So I think this will probably become an every other week deal, but I'll keep you apprised of the situation if I change my mind yet again, which I'm infamous for. So without further ado, I want to take you to a case that occurred in the 80s. And as I was researching it, I got to thinking that in the past, I've always attributed my fascination with this genre to picking up Helter Skelter in junior high and reading it. And then I got to thinking, when I saw this case took place in 1984, and I remember it extremely well, which would have made me younger than junior high age. I mean, I would have been 10 or 11 years old. So clearly this one implanted itself in my brain as well and probably led me to my interest in the true crime and tragic event genre, and I don't know why I never put it together before. When people have asked me what got me into it, I don't know why this case never jumped out previously, but I've always known about it. So now I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about Mr. James Oliver Huberty. He was born in Canton, Ohio, October 11th, 1942. At the age of 3, he did contract polio. He was able to make a pretty full recovery, but it did cause difficulty with him walking from that point forward. His mother abandoned their family in the early 50s, and at that time, people around the family did notice that James became pretty silent and withdrawn. His father later remarried a lady who had a couple children of her own. James didn't like any of them, and according to one of the neighbors, when he would come home, he'd get out of his car and fire off shots just to warn them that, hey, I'm home and stay out of my way. You'll see a pattern develop with Mr. Huberty and guns. In 1964 and 5, he was an apprentice undertaker at a funeral home. The funeral home owner later said that he was not really good with people, but he was a good embalmer, a good employee, he was clean cut, but he's also a loner. At some point, he did start collecting guns and got married in 1965 and would go on to have two daughters. His first family home was burned down. I believe that was in 71 or 2. And he lost his gun collection that he had started at that point in time. He was able to secure a welding job, where he became somewhat friendly with a co-worker due to their mutual interest in gun collecting. They would visit each other's homes and talk about guns. This co-worker did notice that James's house seemed to be filled with them. He had shotguns, rifles, handguns, and he even had an Uzi that he was very proud of. Other neighbors reported that he would only seem to be semi-social whenever he was talking about his gun collection. He was known around the neighborhood for his collection and for his dogs that he was he would train to be guard dogs, and everybody said they were pretty vicious, and there was complaints about that as well. And apparently James wasn't the only one that had a temper. His wife was actually charged with threatening neighbors with a handgun when they interfered with her sleep. A police officer back there in Ohio stated that there had been literally hundreds of police complaints about the Hubertys and their dogs. James was actually only arrested one time, and that was for a drunken disorderly charge at a service station. Although there was at least one other call for domestic abuse, where his wife had said that he had messed up her jaw, but wouldn't go into any further detail. James was later involved in a motorcycle accident that ended up causing an uncontrollable twitch in his right arm, so his job as a welder unfortunately came to an end. He was laid off in 1982, after numerous years of employment. It was at this time that a co-worker said that he became extremely despondent, and he blamed the whole country for his situation. He said that Ronald Reagan and the government were conspiring against him, and even wrote to the Mexican government to apply for residency. He bought lots of food that the co-worker described as survival-type food, canned goods and such, and he stocked up on a lot of ammunition. He was remembered by people that knew him at the time saying that he never really smiled. He was always seemed to be alone, and he had an explosive personality. He was also remembered, of course, after the events that I'll describe later took place, when people went back and talked to people that knew him. They said, yeah, for years, as long as we've known him, he's always talked about wanting to shoot people. So in January of 1984, the Huberty family was relocated to San Cedro, which is a neighborhood district in San Diego, California, and James found work as a security guard. He would ultimately be dismissed from this job in early July 1984. Now we're closing in on the events, and I wanted to start the episode by saying this, and I kind of forgot, so it's fine, it's okay here. There are a large number of victims in this instance, vast majority of them of Hispanic origin. I am going to name them all, but I want to apologize now to anybody that listens if I mispronounce anything. It's certainly not intentional. I'm going to try my best, and hopefully you guys can understand and respect the effort. July 17th, 1984. James himself actually called a mental health center, but when they asked if he was in an immediate emergency or an immediate state of need, he said no, so they did not call him back anytime soon. And as we'll see, the very next day is when these events took place, so even if they had called him back, I don't know that it would have changed anything. July 18th, 1984, he takes his family to the San Diego Zoo, and they pick up some lunch at McDonald's. During this time, he does comment to his wife that society had their chance. At around 3:30 in the afternoon, James leaves his apartment, tells his wife, asks him where he's going, to which he replied, and this becomes a famous quote that you'll see quoted in some places, "I'm going hunting humans." On the way out the door, he told one of his daughters that he would not be coming back home. And you may wonder, as I have always wondered, his wife never did give a satisfactory explanation to officials as to why she didn't call the cops right then and there, but she didn't. James leaves the house equipped with a 9mm Uzi, a Winchester pump action 12 gauge, and a Browning HP model, which is high power pistol, which was also a 9mm. He was seen driving his car around the Big Bear supermarket and a post office, but ultimately found himself at a McDonald's restaurant located at 460 West San Cedro Boulevard in San Diego, California. At about 3:40, They estimated there was 45 people in this McDonald's. James enters the facility wearing his camo fatigue pants, his maroon shirt, orders everybody down, and then just starts shooting. This shooting would go on for 77 minutes. Before it ended, he fired 257 rounds, ultimately killing 22 and wounding 19 additional people. So out of those 45 people that were in there, 41 of them ended up either wounded or killed. Due to the number of victims, the wakes had to be held at the San Cedro Civic Center. Finally, after 77 minutes of just shooting anything and everything that moved in the restaurant, according to numerous witnesses, basically he would shoot until people stopped moving. Some people were able to survive by playing dead. He was shot and killed by SWAT team sniper Chuck Foster, who was on the roof of the post office that was adjacent to the restaurant. He shot him right in the heart and ended the massacre. The victim count was large, and I feel that each person needs to be named. As far as the fatal victims, I didn't get all the names of the people that were wounded. I don't know that they would even necessarily want that out at this point. But the names of the victims who were lost that day are as follows. Victims here being the fatalities. Elsa Herlinda Barboa Firo, age 19, she was a McDonald's employee. Neva Denise Kane, 22, was the McDonald's manager. Michelle Deanne Carncross, 18 years old. Maria Elena Caminero Silva, 19 years old. David Flores Delgado, 11 years old. Gloria Lopez Gonzalez, 23. Omar Alonzo Hernandez, 11. Blythe Reagan Herrera, 31 years old. And the mother of victim Mateo Herrera, who was 11 years old. Paulina Aquino Lopez, 21 years old, a McDonald's employee. Margarita Padilla, 18, a McDonald's employee. Claudia Perez, age 9. Jose Ruben Lozano Perez, age 19. And the one, as bad as this tragedy was, this one really, I don't know how to say it, but it was perhaps this young man really drove the point home about how bad this was. Carlos Reyes, 8 months old, and his mother, Jackie Lynn Wright Reyes, 18 years old. Victor Maximilian Rivera, 25. This is the one I'm going to apologize for. It's the only one that seems kind of tough, so. Eridelcy Vuelvas Vargas, 31. Hugo Luis Velasquez Vazquez, 45. Lawrence Herman Versluis, 62. Ada Velasquez Victoria, 69. And her husband Miguel Victoria Aloha, 74. So, victims aged from 8 months old to 74 years old. On September 26th, 1984, McDonald's tore down the restaurant and gave the property to the city. The city in turn established it as an education center, part of the Southwestern Community College. In front of the school as a memorial to the victims, there's a monument that consists of 21 hexagonal granite pillars ranging in height from 1 to 6 feet. In 1986, Huberty's widow unsuccessfully sued McDonald's and Babcock Wilcox, which is where he worked as a welder in Ohio, for $7.88 million, claiming that the massacre was triggered by a mixture of McDonald's food and work around poisonous materials. She alleged that the monosodium glutamate in the food, combined with the high levels of lead and cadmium in his body from welding, induced delusions and uncontrollable rage. An autopsy did reveal high levels of the metals, most likely built up from the fumes that he had inhaled during his years of welding. The autopsy later revealed also that there was no drugs or alcohol in his system at the time of the killings. And of course, that case was thrown out. She didn't win that case at all. So I remember when this took place. I remember the news reports. I remember seeing all the newspapers at the time. One of the earlier books I picked up, I think, probably in high school, was actually titled Hunting Humans. It was a case files book that had 20 or 30 cases in there, James Huberty being one of them. It was written right around that time. So, of course, that was, I suppose, as far as selling a title or selling a book, that's a title you can use. And that's, I don't remember the full title. I think it was something about 20-some-odd hunting cases. It was Hunting Humans. So, some people in the audience may be familiar with the term going postal. That actually gained steam in the 80s with a few highly publicized incidents of postal workers going to a post office and shooting their co-workers. But this fit into that same area. Researching this, I think I'll probably at least hit on it in a future episode. I don't know. I'll have to see if there's enough background information to make it an entire episode. I don't remember the guy's name, but another case that I remember very, very well, I think it said it came 6 years after this, so that would have been 1990, was a guy in Texas. And for the life of me, I can't remember the name of the town right now. I think I've always known it, but now for some reason I'm forgetting it. But the name of the restaurant was Luby's Restaurant. He actually drove his truck, his pickup truck, through the front glass portion of the restaurant and got out and started shooting everybody. And if I briefly remember correctly, that rampage ended up surpassing the victim count of Huberty's. But Huberty's at the time, nobody really... There hadn't been anything quite like that. I think his was the first mass shooting incident since Charles Whitman in 1966, the University of Texas. Our school shootings and things of that nature, although they've always been there, this is way prior to their rise. But I think this just goes to show that people with mental issues, regardless of what they may be, persecution complex, that seems to be in this guy's background. He clearly felt something was going on if he was calling a mental health center, but going as far back as when he was a kid and his mom left, and people said he changed since then. So clearly having something mental happen, and then finally ultimately snapping to the extent of carrying out this crime. Mental health issues plus the ability to get a hold of weaponry that can do a lot of damage in a short amount of time. These things are going to continue to happen. I'm not going to get on a soapbox about guns and gun rights and gun ownership and stuff like that. I personally have no issue with people owning guns. None. Do I have issues with certain people owning guns? Absolutely. So I'll never be one to talk about gun control. Or if I do, I will choose my words carefully because I want to make sure I get my point across on what I consider that to be. I don't consider it taking people's guns away unless you are found mentally unfit to be able to own them. I do believe there should be some mental health screening, some common sense screening for gun ownership. I'll stand behind that no matter who disagrees or if I lose some people along the way. But I myself, I'm legally allowed to own a gun. I haven't had the financial means to acquire a couple, but if I did, I'd have them. I have no issue with it. I have a number of friends that are concealed carry and are big gun people, in quotes. Hey, all the better. I'm all for going to the range and throwing some downrange, you know. It's a decent release. The problem comes when you get into a mental health crisis. You throw in the ability to Let's just say, I mean, at the jail we had, I think there were Glock 21s, so 12, was it 12? 12 in the magazine, one in the, one up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if I've got the ability to put 13 down range in a matter of seconds, that's an issue if I have bad intentions, as opposed to even a revolver. I mean, that's six pretty quick succession. I've always pointed out, and I pointed out to a few people, that I remember a case, I'll have to refresh my memory on it. I don't remember when it took place, but I think it was a college campus. A kid went in with a crossbow and actually shot. I think an instructor was the only person shot, and I don't believe there was any fatalities, but if you want to kill people, you're going to find a way. So the people that argue that guns are killing all these people, I can't agree with that. There's too many instances of people perpetrating mass amount of damage without a firearm. So I don't think that, in my mind, that's not necessarily a valid argument. Where it becomes a valid argument is if you say somebody who clearly had a problem, then had the ability to pick up high-capacity magazines and go out and do their thing, yes, the victim count is higher. I would argue that there was going to be a victim count regardless. It's just a matter of how much. So that's my two cents on that. Mental health has been, continues to be, will probably always be something that does not get properly addressed, does not get properly, I don't want to say taken care of, that sounds bad, properly addressed, I think, is probably a good place to leave it. You guys might notice now that I've come back with this episode, I've mentioned a couple times wording. I listened to a podcast, it was a political podcast, but I listened to a podcast where one of their guests was very adamant about the words being used and their implications without us even realizing that we're doing it. And she pointed out a few things that people just throw out there and they think they're having a conversation about something, but just that word alone triggers a different response in people's minds and maybe takes you down a path that's counterproductive to what you're trying to say. So I think I've always been pretty choosy with the words I use, but now maybe I've become even more so, for better or worse. But that's something that I'll try to focus on. We're talking about our next episodes on Morbidly Macabre being about cults. Something that came to mind is I do know David Thibodeau, who was a Waco survivor, and he pointed out in his book the use of the word cult and what it did to people's perceptions. So that seed's always been there. Just hearing that guest last week on that podcast, I think kind of drove it home even more that you have to, it's not just what you're trying to get across, but it sometimes boils down to just the words you use and what they mean to that particular audience. So I'm rambling on a little bit, guys. Sorry about that. I think most of you at least like listening to me a little bit, and maybe that gives you something else to think about as well with how we use words and present our points to things. You kind of got to be careful, especially nowadays. It seems people are picking up on not subliminal stuff, but they're picking up on key phrases, key words that they might not even realize are something to them, but it plants little seeds inside their brain. Well, he said this word, and that's what it means to me, and it could be taken completely out of context. So that's about where I'm at. Like I said, I think we'll probably, I feel comfortable in saying every other week gives me time to properly research and write these things down. Again, if you guys have any cases that you want to see, or in this case here, hear us talk about, definitely drop us a line on Facebook. Get those likes out there. I know we're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts seem to be the two biggest platforms performing for the podcast. I have not gone into Apple Podcasts. I know you can leave reviews and stuff there. I've never even looked. But if you want to go that route, go that route. I'll do my best to find those as well. I think I mentioned maybe on social media, not necessarily on the pod, that we did run an experiment with a Zoom call, and it sounded fantastic. So I know there will be some interview episodes in the future. I guess I just don't have a set format on how I want to do things. I feel like I want to throw in an interview one week, then maybe a serial killer here, and then some of these unknown cases here. Give you a potpourri of true crime.
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord, yes. I noticed, just completely by happenstance, that this episode, when I was researching it, well, although I knew the case, I didn't realize the date, July 18, so this will be hitting right about an anniversary date for this massacre. I guess I would feel slightly remiss. I don't agree with the humor here, but you might see where this is going. When this took place, people that were trying to make light of it, do you know what it was known as briefly?
I'm trying to go back. No, I can't.
The McMassacre.
I should have seen that coming.
I
knew it had some kind of play on McDonald's.
Yes, it sure did. And like I said, I feel remiss to not mention that. I get dark humor. I like dark humor. I have a hard time applying that one to this. I just do. I would never call it that.
Yeah. With the victims taken into account.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
So, I mean, when the space shuttle, the first one that blew up when I was in junior high, I remember all the jokes about that. And I laughed at them in the junior high at the time. You can appreciate the dark sense of it. But this one, I just couldn't apply any jokes to it. And that was, unfortunately, you'll still find a source out there. If you type it in, it'll come up that it was called that briefly. So that's about it for this evening. You guys will get this for consumption on Wednesday. As per usual, I will have a graphic up that I know there's some pictures I could find. I won't make them. I know there's some pictures of bodies and lots of blood on a McDonald's tile floor. I don't think I'll include any of those, but might include some of the ones that I remember seeing in the newspapers at the time. One of the victims, actually, I believe her son was 5 years old. She handed him to a complete stranger to get him out of there. He survived. It was, and I believe she did as well. There is a documentary. There was talk of a documentary. If it's been out, I haven't seen it, and I'm not familiar with it. So, there's that out there as well. But I encourage anybody to look into this a little further. I gave you the nuts and bolts. I gave you most of what you will find. I couldn't find a whole lot of other stuff out there. But that's the McDonald's Massacre, San Cedro, California, July 1984. James Huberty. Thanks for listening, guys. Catch you soon.